What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. This is episode number 65. I am your co-host, Jason, and sitting next to me, sipping a cup of water, is none other than my partner in crime, the well-scribed, well-scholared Will. What's up, buddy?
I think every time you open, it's the usual sipping water. You look outside and it's still raining. I think like every time it's your turn to open, it just so happens that, you know, whoever's controlling the weather is like, yeah, no, today's going to be a wet, wet day. It fucking sucks. I mean, when you were walking over, was it raining yet or no?
Oh, no, but I opened the blinds when I woke up and I was just like, today is not going to be one of those bright, sunny days. It was just so obvious. It was overcast. It was just gray.
It was pretty miserable yesterday, too, because I was seeing that the clouds were looming, and I was hoping that like it would just rain overnight and clear up the skies for
but
today.
But I don't think it really did.
It never rained. That's why it feels really awful outside. It's like really stuffy, low pressure. I'm just waiting for like torrential rain.
Yeah, and you know it's going to be like mad rainfall at this point because it's like accumulating,
yeah,
right?
It's perfect that it's going to be raining all weekend, I think. So like that's, you know, that's wonderful.
And you guys can also listen in if it's rain or shine on our episode number 65. We're doing ASAP 3, our anime series adaptation primer. I almost forgot what the acronym is. The third one, generally these have been pretty well received, and actually this time around we have some very hype IPs to talk about.
Yeah. So the previous iterations of ASAP, which were 1 and 2, covered 4 different manga series that are primed to get an adaptation. Some have released, some are still waiting to come out. Say, for example, we did ASAP 1, but Solo Leveling isn't out yet, but the hype keeps building and building and building.
I think it's winter.
It's not out yet, but they've released a lot of like trailers, promo material. The other ones that we've mentioned before, like for example, Oshinoko, like a long, long, long time ago.
Yep.
That one is, you know, doing gangbusters. It's not like we're trying to be prophets and predicting stuff, but it's like
because we already know that's the whole point of ASAP, right?
We know hype when we see hype.
Yeah.
So hopefully the next couple of ones that we're going to be going over will also carry a similar level, if not higher level of hype. We're not trying to, you know, blow the top and just be like, oh, these are going to be the best series that come out when they get adapted. It's more just, you know, after reading them, we felt that there's a good level of material that can be adapted to screen on a good level and
yeah,
hopefully be, enjoyable to most, maybe only to some. So rather than doing 4 series, we just felt that there was too much stuff coming out in the next couple of months, maybe even the next year. So we're actually doing 5 manga series this time.
Yeah, and of the 5, I think only one of them... they all have anime adaptations officially announced, so because that's the whole point of ASAP. But only one of them is kind of relatively unknown. Everything else, the other 4, are either premiering in a couple of months or the next season after, in winter 2024.
Yeah, I think 3 of them will be coming out in fall, so in just a couple of months, maybe even just a couple of weeks, depending on when you hear this. One will be releasing in winter 2024, so at the end of the year, or maybe even the beginning of next year. And then the last one, at the moment, if you look at its mail entry, there's nothing much other than just one like promo poster, and that's really about it. Not much news, but our guess is that it will probably release sometime in 2024.
Yeah. Okay, so ASAP 1, we talked about Kaiju number 8, and I know we were going to eliminate that as a news story, so we're not going to like put it in here as a timestamp, but just to let you guys know, that actually now finally has a premiere date of spring 2024, so April.
Yeah.
So
if you're interested, you can look on Anime News Network. They've unveiled a cast list as well. So it's, you know, still a ways away, you know, still several months, but at least you know that it will be coming very, very, very soon. Yeah, we'll wait and see. At the moment, the manga is still doing really, really, really well. So, I didn't say really, really, really as a precursor.
Oh, my God, I knew it. So, all gas, no breaks. Let's go into the main discussion topic. We have been reading a lot, probably watching some stuff as well, but we're going to forego that news as well because I have a lot to say about all of these pieces of these five IPs. So let's, should I just reveal all five and then go through it, or reveal as we go?
I think we'll reveal as we go. I mean, in the end, right, we'll be putting the timestamps in there too.
True, and it's kind of in the title too. So yeah
exactly.
Okay, fair enough.
So the first one we'll be going over. Now, this one is probably the the black sheep amongst the five. It's the one that is like the least like its counterparts in this episode. It is the,
you know, when you have a sibling of five, right, you always get the quirky one, right? You always get the weird one.
This one is extremely quirky. The series we'll be talking about first is the 100 girlfriends who really 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 love you, or Kimi no koto ga dai 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 suki na hyaku ni no kanajo.
Yeah, we're just going to say 100 girlfriends or 100 kanajos for short.
I just noticed as well that in the Japanese, it's dai, 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 daisuki, but they only say dai five times, whereas in the English, they say really... I read really six times, not five times. I can't count today.
It's all good, bro.
Yep. So this is a manga series that was written... how long ago was it? I think it's still airing. I mean, it's still in syndication.
Yeah.
So it is published in English by Seven Seas Entertainment. The manga series is done by Rikito Nakamura, who did the story, and Yukiko Nozawa, who did the art. Currently, the MAL score for it is a very respectable 7.8, ranking at 1,250. Popularity-wise, you know, manga numbers tend to be a little bit low on the MAL database, but still, with 45,000 plus, that puts it at a popularity of 339, which is quite popular.
Very popular.
Remember, the manga database is vast, right?
Yeah.
It's not just including all the stuff that you've read. It's also the stuff that is like one-shots, like a short release series, Japan-only exclusives. And also, because of the fact that not many of us... Jason, you do read a lot of shoujo manga. There's a lot of shoujo manga that kind of, you know, fly under the radar, but that's also included on the manga database too for MAL.
All of it, yeah. I mean, you could technically filter it by manga, but by default, it's kind of like all of written print media is like one list. Just like how anime, movies, and series are like the anime popularity and rank.
Yeah.
You could limit it, but let's just go with the big boy, the group all. So
let's mention like when it's going to be releasing. So it'll be coming out in fall 2023, so in just a few weeks time. It will be airing, who knows on which what platforms yet, but we'll
October 8th is the announcement,
the date, but also which platforms we don't know yet.
We do not know.
It could be High Dive, because they've been doing a lot of work in terms of getting exclusives. The likelihood they'll be on Crunchyroll. If it's on Netflix, that'd be surprising for me. Actually, no, not surprising. I've seen some weird stuff on Netflix recently. But let's not talk about the animation studio just yet. Let's go into the plot synopsis. So the manga series opens up with a young, I think, are they middle school or high school?
I think it is going into high school.
Okay. So basically young, pubescent, 15, 16-year-old Rentaro Aijo, a young boy who decides, you know what, I'm going to muster up the confidence and try and get a girlfriend. So I'm going to confess my love to this this classmate of mine. Unfortunately, the classmate does not feel the same way about him and rejects him, culminating to a total of 100 rejections for this poor Rentaro. Now, for him, he's, you know, just been going through a series of heartbreaks. He decides, you know what, I'm going to go to this this temple, this shrine. Now, in terms of like...
Yeah, because that's what all like heartbroken guys do.
Well, to be fair, it's also tied into a lot of, you know, Japanese folklore and mythology as well. I mean, it's the same with Chinese, it's the same with Korean. If you have bad grades, you go to a temple and pray that you get good grades.
Give thanks, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. So it's just praying to the powers above to be able to give you, you know, just some luck. So he goes there, decides, you know what, I'm going to pray, flip a coin in there, and as he's starting to pray, all of a sudden, the head... of a god of the shrine just pops out from the donation box, scaring the shit out of Rentaro. But realizing, oh, you're actually going to help me? Sure, I'll help you, no problem. And he blesses him with the ability to be able to, matchmake with people that he confesses his love to. Now, unfortunately, when he does actually succeed the first time, it's not just a solo attempt. It's not just one time that he just says, I'm going to go and get a girlfriend, and hopefully it works. He doesn't just end up with one girlfriend. Another girl also happens to be there, too. And as he confesses his love, she also confesses her love, and all of a sudden, he's stuck with a dilemma. Wait a minute. I thought I was just supposed to have one girlfriend. Why do I have two girlfriends now?
Yeah, like, what's the deal, man? Like, I thought soulmates, I mean, typically speaking in folklore, you know, fairy tales, you only get one, right?
Yep.
Because destiny.
Yeah. Turns out it was a fat finger error. Instead of just saying one,
so good,
it was 100 confessions that would become successful. And there was also one small minor detail that the god forgot to mention to Rentaro. If any of the girls that confesses their love to him does not actually become his girlfriend, they will die. And so, yeah, just simple shit. Rentaro just needs to have 100 girlfriends.
So the way that I interpreted, because I'm assuming that the English translation, as good as it is, kind of it's lost because it's kind of like Asian culture in terms of like the, you know, within Japanese culture, there's like the red string of fate, you know, right? And to me, it's like when you go against destiny, you're essentially trying to prevent something that is kind of like you're impossible, like it does not compute.
Well, so I wouldn't say it's just tied to Asian mythology too, right? I mean, like it's all based on religion, it's all based on mythical beliefs that
true.
Transcends over to Western beliefs too, right? That's why there's people who, you know, before, I mean, there are people who pray to Santa, you know, on Boxing Day. It's like, dear Santa, I hope
I do that all the time,
you know. I mean, like, when was the last time you sent a letter to Santa?
It's been a while because I keep getting no replies.
What kind of cookies and milk did you leave for him?
There was chocolate chip for a while.
Ugh, boo,
but then
boring.
I decided, because I got into Snickerdoodle cookies for a while. So
okay.
I have a thing for Snickerdoodle for some reason.
And like, then you paired it with oat milk?
No, never.
Full cream?
Yeah, always, bro.
Ginger snaps are the way to go.
Ooh. Okay, so, but...
Yeah, back onto the anime.
So, essentially, when you're going against destiny, calamity ensues. I mean, that's just like a thing that is in a lot of themes that are of this nature. So, you know, you don't want all like nine, in this case, at this point, 98 other potential soulmates to meet their calamity.
And well, before we even get to the 98, mm-hmm. He already has a dilemma. I have one too many. How the hell am I going to have a relationship with both of them, but also like elaborate in a way for both of them to be like, yeah, no, this makes sense. We can have a, you know, an open relationship between me, you, and this other girl. Because both girls would be like, what the fuck? No, that's totally not cool. In any sense of realism, this shit would not fly.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, in case you're thinking this is spoilers, this is like the plot synopsis that is in the official like promotion material and everything.
Yeah, we even talked about like all the other ones too.
Yeah, so it in our opinion, it's fair game. So maybe we'll put a timestamp in plot summary or something. But anyways, the point is that we got to convince you either to read the manga or anticipate the anime adaptation that's incoming. So yeah, we got to go into it.
It's the plot synopsis, as we mentioned. So
it's unique to ASAP as
basically,
well.
Basically, it's like, you know, you need to know what the fuck the whole premise of the series is. And then afterwards, well, okay, I guess he's managed to somehow get two girlfriends. How the hell is he going to manage getting the other 98? So that's what the rest of the series will be. I think in terms of the manga, Jason, you're fairly caught up with it. There, of course, you're going to be seeing all 100 of them. I think they're nowhere close to, you know, revealing all 100 girlfriends yet, right?
I think right now where I am at in the manga, they're in the teens. I still have like I think a bit to go.
So like about 1/5 of the way.
Yeah.
Right. I have a feeling though that like they're probably going to start ramping it up because there's no way that, you know, people would have the mental fatigue to be able to actually go through all 100 of them at the pace they're going. But again, this I'm
Who
not
knows,
the one
right?
writing this.
Yeah.
So on to the anime adaptation. The studio that will be responsible for it is Bibri Animation Studio. Now, in our retrospective episode earlier this year, we mentioned that Bibri, unfortunately, was one of the not worst performing, but they definitely didn't do that well. It was a shame. Of course, it's like you never wish for studios to, you know, perform poorly, just not get good adaptations. But the, you know, numbers don't lie. A lot of the series they released did not break the 7.00 mark on my anime list, or maybe they were like low to mid sevens. That doesn't mean that we're going to be sort of like slating this particular adaptation and be like, oh, you know, if Bibri's handling it, then that means 100 Girlfriends is not going to be a good adaptation. But at least, you know, in terms of what we've read so far, now I've only read one volume, and I think that's like a fair assessment in terms of like where things go, in terms of like the pacing, in terms of the flow, in terms of the character developments. One volume was enough for me to sort of get an idea of how this series would develop, because you already saw a fair amount of plot development, character building. I guess there's some sort of like deeper dive into like the world of relationship building in this series as well. So I'm not so worried in terms of the animation quality. I think because there were trailers that came out for it, and yeah, it all looked pretty decent.
Yeah, right? and for ASAP generally, how Will and I operate is we not only read the source manga or the manga adaptation if the source is like a light novel, but we also try to at least get a glimpse of what the anime adaptation will look like, at least to the best of our abilities. So usually that would require like a trailer of sorts, because yeah, that's all we've got, right?
Yeah. So I'm not going to be like reading everything that's out there, unless, of course, you know, there's some stuff that's just really, really good, like Solo Leveling or Kaiju Number 8, then I will read beyond what's necessary. But I think a volume was enough for me to get a gist of how this series would develop. My initial thoughts in terms of how this potentially could get adapted is that it's going to be pretty average, I think. The reason why I say it's average, it is not just down to, it's not down to like Bibri. I think it's just also the fact that these kinds of weird, like love polygon or like whatever the
I mean,
term
what is like a 100-sided shape? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But I know what you mean.
Because it's like if you like do like a three-person relationship that's like a love triangle, then you go to like a love like polygon, like a love like pentagon, like hexagon,
go all the way to like
dodecahedron.
Yeah. But like, look, I think I in many ways agree with Will in terms of the footage that I saw, the pedigree of Burberry. Of course, is that a deal breaker? No. Animation studio may have like a previous like repertoire or record of catalog, but obviously over time they can get better, they can do good work. You know, I'm not trying to disparage someone's reputation, whether it is really good or really bad. Really, people can have a flawless streak and then have duds, and the inverse is also true. However, one of the things that I also want to mention about 100 Girlfriends is, generally speaking, there is the Sugoi manga, like, oh, this anime series
needs, manga ga sugoi.
Yes, which is kind of a survey of people, readers, who, and one of the categories is animes that they want to get adapted. You know, Forever, Komi Can't Communicate was on there. I mean, we've used it as a news story every year that when it gets released. And 100 Girlfriends is also on that list. And despite the fact that I actually really love the manga, I think I gave it like a 8.5, 8 out of 10. I do have to admit that I think that the anime adaptation is not going to hit the same as the manga, because it's just so weird and unique and quirky. And I'm not even just talking about like, oh, it's like multiple girlfriends, because we get harems all the time.
I think the other thing that might go against it as well is that in the same season that it's releasing, we're also getting the second season of Girlfriend, Girlfriend.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not to say that they're the same.
And Rent a Girlfriend now.
Yeah. So that just might be like, oh, it's just, you know, like harem slash like love polygon fucking like overload for you. And that's a fair assessment. The fact that you've got two series that are going head-to-head, you know, both of them with the word girlfriend in the title. And to be fair, I mean, I don't know much about Girlfriend, but I can't imagine it to be like
hella that. Dumb. So dumb, you know? But I love it.
Yeah. So, yeah, 100 Girlfriends is probably going to do decently. And by decent, I'm saying it's like high 6, low 7, something like that. It really just depends on, you know, how the animation and all of the voice acting is done, too. You only got a very small glimpse of it through the trailers. And I also just felt that in terms of, like, reading the first volume, the flow was decent. But a lot of the comic gags, a lot of the jokes that go in there may or may not translate well on screen.
Yeah. Let me add to that because, like, the volumes that are later on, they parody things like, for example, this is not necessarily a spoiler, but they parody, for example, Your Name as like a shtick. There is a zombie arc of sorts in the first volume, I think. And it is done in such a way that it's hard to translate onto the screen. And they do meta stuff like Deadpool, kind of like, oh, I'm looking and talking to the mangaka or the reader. Or like, hey, didn't we do this 3 chapters back? Like, literally saying that in the manga panel. And you're just like, if that were to be an anime, yes, it would be. You can say like, oh, didn't we do this 2 episodes ago? But it's not going to hit the same. It's kind of like, in some ways, like, lame. You know what I mean?
But I think it's also the fact that, like, the manga series, well, it's been running for a while. It started, like, releasing back in 2019. So that was, like, not that long after, like, the movies of Deadpool and Your Name came out. So maybe the jokes, the shticks at that time, like, hit different. But given the fact that, you know, like, it's been 7 years since Your Name. That's how long ago the movie came out. I don't remember when Deadpool came out, but it definitely came out pre-pandemic. So it's probably because of the fact that the jokes were a lot more fresh back then that it probably, like, translates well, at least in manga form. But when you have slightly outdated sort of like references and comical gags in the anime, people may or may not like resonate well with it. It's hard to say.
Yeah, because it's time sensitive, right? Yeah,
there might be some people that are this like diehard like Your Name and Deadpool fans, and it just works for them. I just think that it's hard to sort of rehash that and like, you know, have people just be like, oh yeah, no, this is totally cool. I'm fine for like having a Your Name reference or like a Deadpool reference.
In yeah, game. And going off of that, okay, the Deadpool like meta, you know, fourth wall breaking type of trope, you could say like, how can you copyright that? But there is literally a parody, and there are many more of like, there's like a baseball arc, you know, there's like a sports, you know, there's all these different things that is kind of close to like JoJo copyright level, or like, how are you going to juggle that? Maybe you get permission and then all is good, all is fair, but then it's iffy, right? So on print versus on live media animation on screen is kind of different ball game.
Yeah. So no, I think parodying is fine, but as Jason mentioned, right, the laws in terms of fair use in Japan are very muddied. It's really hard to, you know, get a good grip of what actually is just, you know, fair use. When the fact that they don't actually have a proper definition of what fair use is.
Yeah.
Now, but that aside, I don't think that's going to be what derails or like potentially makes or breaks this series. I think overall, if you're looking for a decent rom-com, right, and it's not Girlfriend, or it's not any of the edgy stuff that are coming out in fall 2023, this could be something that tickles your fancy. I think that this is something that is an easy watch. It's the easiest watch of the 5 that we'll be mentioning today, because it just does not require any brain power whatsoever. You could just have this playing in the background and you'd still be able to get along with it.
I will say, because obviously I'm biased, because I actually really like the manga. I think the manga and the way that it juggles the premise, the fourth wall breaking, the parody, is actually done in a way that I really enjoy. And I do find it very funny and just very, in some ways, sometimes even like wholesome and heartwarming. Maybe not to the degree where I'm going to like sob my eyes out like Violet Evergarden, but it's always like a fun time. So sure, I think the anime, as you said, Will, like low sevens, high sixes.
It's hard because in terms of like adapting material, like you never know. There's never a guarantee that it will hit well.
Yeah, then you get Dangers in My Heart, and then all of a sudden we're both wrong, right?
Well, that's not what I'm getting at. I think it's just the fact that it's also releasing in a season where there's a lot of competition.
Fuck yeah. Right? Like, no
so,
joke.
So, like I don't think it's a Dangers in My Heart situation. I think it's just the fact that there's a lot of other girlfriend-type series. There's a lot of harem series. There's a lot of edgy stuff that could actually just, you know, sort of take away the potential viewers for 100 Girlfriends and get them to go to watch those things instead. But I'm confident that this would be a 7. Like, you know, it's like a 6.8, 6.9, or if, you know, best case scenario, 7.2, 7.3.
I think at the end of the day, it's a W because that might get a lot of, like, anime watchers to then read the manga. So, yeah. I mean, to me, that's a W.
And also with, like, Love Polygon, harem kind of series, it's never really the plot that drives people to get interested in the series. It's the characters. And that might be something that could swing people over to 100 Girlfriends because there are some really good characters.
All the tropes that you can imagine, it's all there.
Yeah,
definitely.
So the verdict is still there. I think that, you know, people will have to actually watch the series to make a decision on whether or not they want to continue it. You know, when we go into our fall 2023 premieres, maybe we'll have a little more insight in terms of how things are adapted. If you hear the thunderstorm behind us,
dude, God is mad,
yeah,
dude.
We got a rainstorm coming into Hong Kong. So I am. I'm going to give this a decent seal of approval.
Yeah,
the manga score is one thing that never really translates to whether or not an anime adaptation will be successful. But I think it would be a decent time for anybody that wants to check it out. So, yeah, when Fall 23 rolls through, put it on. See how you feel. If you don't like it, there's Girlfriend Season 2.
Yeah, and I'll probably watch both and let you guys know how I feel about both of them. That's the way it is.
On to the next adaptation, we are going to be going over The Witch and the Beast. Now, this is going to be starting a trend of fantastical, magical series that we'll be talking about in today's episode. The Witch and the Beast, published in English by Kodansha. The manga series is done by Kosuke Satake, who did both the story and the art. Now, the malinformation on one end is really, really good, but on the other end, it's the fact that it's an 8.07 puts it in the top 700, but because of the fact that there are like far fewer members on the manga entry on Mal, just under 10,000, it does mean that its popularity is 1,839. Still fine. I think it's one of those kinds of, like, if you know, then you know, right? There's definitely a minority of people that really, really enjoy reading this, but at the same time, this is just Mal. This doesn't necessarily represent everybody. I think that I don't know if many Japanese people use MyAnimeList. They probably have their own databases.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think when the anime premieres, right? I think for all of these animation adaptations, the scores will dramatically shift for better or for worse just because there's more exposure, people are more aware of it, or they just check out the source. That's just the way it is. So I anticipate that these numbers will change, as with all ASAP candidates in the future and in the past. Yeah. So
I did do a small update earlier in the week in terms of some of the Mal stats. Generally, all the series either went up in score or they went up in membership. It's small numbers. It's not like it went from like a 7 to an 8 overnight. It's more just like, oh, it was originally a 7.8. Now it's like a 7.5, a 7.85. There were 10,000 members before. Now it's at 11,000. So, you know, there's definitely people as the seasons go by, gain more and more eyeballs onto the source before,
or when they announce the anime, right?
Just basically people wanting to see like what is all about.
I mean, just like us. So
this will be premiering in winter 2024. The date still not confirmed, but at least you'll know that it will be releasing at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. Most likely sometime in January.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, typically. Yeah.
There's not much of a plot synopsis because I think it portrays itself to be one of those kinds of mystery, it's an action mystery.
with horror elements, kind of.
Horror in the sense that there's, like, mythical beasts and, like, some real dark magic and whatnot. I think that's the kind of, not really horror, but more, like, shock value kind of thing. Right.
So it has been announced that it's going to be produced by Yokohama Animation Lab. There's obviously a trailer out with the announcement of the Winter 2024 premiere. And, Will, what do you think of the manga?
So the manga plays out with two main characters. Gido, who is a very angry woman, a very strong, powerful, angry woman. And Ashaf, who is kind of like her...
like handler?
Handler kind of...
partner in crime kind of thing? Yeah.
They live in a world where magic exists. However, it's not as straightforward. Imagine... like magic in the sense that there are like it's almost like Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood level in terms of like the if you have these powers, great, but more often than not these powers usually end up in the hands of bad people, and that's when shit gets really, really awful.
It really does remind me of something like Ancient Magus's Bride, in just terms of like the severity of how brutal some of like the topics of discussion are. Obviously, I think that The Witch and the Beast carries a more darker tone, and I will definitely get into that. But yeah, this shit is no joke, right? It's not like your happy fairy tale Disney princess type of scenario. This is magic, kind of in a very real and grounded way in many instances, right?
Yeah,
and,
it's not so much that it's like, oh, like, you have, you know, witches flying on brooms, you have people with wands doing levitation spells. This is not Harry Potter. This is much, much darker than that. It's basically if it's casting fireballs and causing, like, worldly destructions.
I think the one-liner that I would use is, imagine criminal minds mixed with dark, grimy magic.
Yeah, it's like the case of Vanitas, but when things get really, really, really bad.
Yeah. I mean, no, like, I think that's very apt, right?
Yeah. So where are we really getting on this? It's like it's hard to really go that much further in terms of explaining the story, because the plot synopsis itself is very, very short. It's just talking about two characters that are solving crimes, usually tied to a magic wielder, a magic user, in this case, witches, which I think is a nice juxtaposition in terms of using the title The Witch and the Beast, because you'd be thinking, oh, well, the word beast in there must mean that they're the evil doer. But then again, it's also, you know, when you kind of think about series like Beauty and the Beast, like, the beast itself doesn't necessarily denote something that is an evil tyrant, but more rather, you know, something of a beastly figure, but may actually have like a heart of gold kind of thing.
Yeah, or misinterpreted intentions, exactly. Or tragic backstory. It is very, I think the Beauty and the Beast analogy or comparison is so accurate, because it gives you that perception, right, with just that name, The Witch and the Beast. And then when you think of things like Harry Potter and everything, there is a certain perception that you might have, or we all might have, when we just hear the title alone. But I have to admit that when I read the manga going forward, I now realize what the title means. And even then, I don't know exactly what it means, but it is like not... it does give a first impression, and I can tell you it will probably not be accurate.
Yeah. So in this instance of The Witch and the Beast, very clearly you kind of have an idea of who the Beast is. So with the focus being on the witch, a lot of the series focuses on town folk, like just, you know, everyday pedestrians and, you know, passersby that live under a veil of thinking that things are fine and dandy because of the world of magic and things are good. Things are always protecting us because of the fact that we have these magical powers that, you know, imbue the city with wonderful creations and great livelihoods. But, of course, this is never one of those black and white situations, and that's what Gido and Ashaf are trying to rectify. They know better than to just see the facade of witchcraft as being, you know, this almighty good doer and all that. It's definitely a lot darker than what appears on the surface.
So this was one of those mangas that I have read a while ago and kept up with it I'm not up to date, but I think I am at like volume 4 or 5. I think I'm like 20-ish chapters in. So when I heard that it got an anime adaptation, I was so surprised. I was genuinely like, that's awesome. But I really was very, very surprised, especially now that you've read the manga, Will. You probably have some idea of just like the general tone and the gravity and severity of the IP, right? How do you feel about it?
It reads like a seinen, in the sense that the plot delivery, the conversation lines between characters, it's a very slow tone.
Yes.
And I think that works for certain audiences, the fact that, you know, they really do take time to world build, to develop characters, and sort of, you know, create this sense of just sort of uneasiness that exists within the world of Witch and the Beast. What I would say in terms of how it would be adapted, now I haven't really watched a whole lot of Yokohama Animation Labs. I think it may be a pretty decent studio. Again, this is not to say that like we're using studios as a barometer for how well a studio, how well a series will be adapted. We're just going by what information that we have. Now, in terms of how I think, I mean, the anime looks like it will be decent. I think that at least the action, that's the thing about this series too, as there is a lot of conflict and battle in this series, there's not a whole lot of action. Rather, it is sort of like the lead up, the dread in which one comes across a difficult situation when they're coming up against a tyrant or up against evil forces. That's the kind of sort of, I think, the driving force of what leads people to reading Witch and the Beast in the first place. It's not so much the action itself, but it's the road leading up towards it.
Yeah, I agree that it is a seinen through and through, not only in terms of the...
Not just the tone, right?
Not just the tone, right? But it's also... It doesn't play out like a instant gratification.
No.
It and the uneasiness is something that genuinely like occurs as you read it, because you're just trying to figure out everything is a mystery and not everything is answered all the time, but it is enough for you to kind of piece together by yourself. And it kind of, because it's also the world is basically very real, obviously, without, like, if you exclude the magical element part, but everything else is so real. It kind of is like, it's real, but it's not, it's fictitious, but it's not. Like, I can totally see if magic were be implemented and it turned like in a dark evil timeline, yeah, like reality, this is that world.
Like, you're not using wands to levitate stuff or just cast like lumination spells.
You use it to kill people. And you use it to fuck people up.
And you
up.
Use it to indoctrinate and control people, right?
It's really fucked up some of the earlier like cases that they go through. Like, it's just really fucked up. Like,
yeah. I think that this may be something that works against The Witch and the Beast. Not, I mean, personally for me, like, I like that it's different. I like that it's not a series that is like 100% like high octane, fast paced, and you're just like bowling straight through all the plot and just getting straight to the action. I like that they take the time to get to the action by giving you like a lot of exposition, a lot of, you know, interaction between characters, develop those characters, build the world that they live in, because, dude, like, some of the landscapes in the manga series are gorgeous, and I think
so
that,
drawn well, man.
And I think that it will take time to essentially perfect it. My issue is that may not, and again, it's because of the fact that it seems to be more within the seinen demographic. There might not be as many watchers for this series. And it's, you know, it's comparable to why there's a lot fewer manga readers on the MAL database compared to, for example, 100 Girlfriends, right? It's almost 5 times as many people for 100 Girlfriends compared to the other series. So it's
just like a harder... It's harder to convince someone to read The Witch and the Beast than it is to read 100 Girlfriends, for example. And I anticipate that the anime adaptation, I'm not even sure that they will go all the way in terms of the full display of just the sheer carnage that occurs in the manga. Does that mean then they might cut corners in terms of censoring certain things? Who knows, right? But at least I can guarantee that there will be carnage, there will be bloodshed, but how much, how accurate it is, it in a way it matters, and in a way it doesn't matter, right?
Don't treat it as like a gore fest or like a shonen action kind of level of, you know, visual animation. I think that that would be the wrong way of interpreting it, and I think it would be a disservice to The Witch and the Beast. I think that it's one of those, it's like watching, again, like going back on it, it's like watching The Ancient Magus's Bride.
Yeah,
that it does become a slow burn, but when you get to the points where there is conflict, when there is action, that it, because you've had so much backstory leading up to it, it makes you feel so much better. But I understand that people can be impatient. People want to see the nitty gritty. They want to see people beating each other up. They want to see like amazing animation done because, you know, it juxtaposes all this like strong magical ability that exists within this world. I totally get that. This may not be a series for you. I could be wrong. They might take a different animation sort of adaptation level for this series. But I think that what's required for this series is a good level of patience.
Yeah. I have to admit that, well, not really admit, it makes it sound, have a certain connotation. When I watch the footage of the trailer, it looks very clean, very presentable. It looks very good. Right, I mean, this is just purely based off very limited footage that we are all like, we can all like be accessible to on YouTube and whatnot. Because I have to admit that despite it looking very clean and despite it looking very smooth, obviously it's not like, you know, MAPPA level, Jujutsu Kaisen level, and it doesn't need to be.
No,
but
that's why they didn't get like the production IGs, they didn't get like the MAPPAs and whatnot to do it. I think it's just because of the fact that this is not an action heavy series. There's no need for that kind of studio to do it, and that's why, like, as much as we don't know a whole lot about Yokohama Animation Lab, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I gave the manga 9 out of 10. I don't know about you, Will. What would you give it?
I only read one volume, but I'm really enjoying it. But like at the moment, like I'm not really giving a score on it other than the fact that it's... Are you vibing with it? If you don't vibe with the anime when it releases, then I implore you to go and read the manga, because that's the thing with like these kinds of slow-paced series. It's easier to pace yourself when reading a manga compared to watching an anime. You're always going to be fixed on 25, 30 minutes per episode, or if it's a double episode format, then 50 minutes and so on. Whereas when you're reading a manga, it's really up to you to control the pace of how quickly you go from panel to panel. And it's laid out bare for you. You see the amount of text you need to read. You see like the sort of open panels there are when they're trying to illustrate the world that Witch and the Beast inhabits. So it's easier for you to sort of create and imagine what that world would be like if it were to play out on screen, which is why there's like three things I think are very important for the series. Like animation, like that's just basically like a bare minimum, right?
Right, of course.
One thing is the music.
Ooh.
Music, which then also ties into the second thing, which is voice acting.
Does it need like organ, you know?
I don't think like organ or like slash like orchestral music is the one to go through. There may be some like orchestral tunes to go along with certain scenes. But I think generally it needs to be able to sort of create that ominous like feeling. It needs to be able to create those dark undertones that exist within the world of Witch and the Beast. And so that's like, if it's going to be like orchestral slash like symphonic, or maybe they use like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, more like lo-fi.
Drone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to say they need like a fantastic like musical scores and whatnot. They just need to be able to create a good level of sound design that carries the tone from the manga pages onto the screen.
To me, of course, then you can go on to your other two things. But for me, it's going
on. The second thing was the voice acting.
Oh, I see. I was going to say that because we're talking about sound and orchestral music, to me, the inverse is actually what I worry about more, which is the times when it chooses to be quiet or silent.
That's the whole point of sound design.
Of course, yeah, right. Absolutely. It's like, yeah. You know, Dead Space, right? When you hear like the clank of the ship,
when you hear like footsteps walking through a hallway,
that you just freak the fuck out. You might like jitter. You know, that's the whole point, right? And it's not necessarily like a jump scare, but it's just that uncomfortable, uneasiness, goosebump, like. What the fuck is about to happen if I turn the corner and then nothing happens and nothing happens for like 40 minutes, but you're just on edge the fucking whole time.
Yeah, that's why like ambient sound is going to be all in general, like, when it comes to music and silence, ambience and whatnot, that all falls under sound design, being able to actually procure enough music to be able to drive certain scenes. But when there is no music, what are you going to do to fill in the gaps? Now, the voice acting side, that is like... Obviously, it's never a case of, oh, just get the best voice actors. No, it's, again, like the hard part in terms of doing adaptations is trying to personify the characters that exist on paper. How do they move? How do they walk? How do they... It might be easy to be able to get them to move around, but when it comes to the voice acting, they need to be able to deliver the lines nice and clear. Again, to carry the tone of the series, it's going to be a little bit more gruff, grim. You know, you might have those kinds of like lighter voices when it comes to, like, for example, whenever you have like real villainous kind of characters, they tend to have a more sort of like deeper voice as opposed to something that's a little more light. But at the same time, when you're talking about the characters in The Witch and the Beast, who really is a villain? Who really is the one that actually is the evil doer in the series? And so it's going to be interesting on how they delivered those lines, how they create those characters and their personalities through screen. Now, the last one I want to talk about, and this one is a no-brainer, the pacing. And I mentioned that, of course, you need to have a good level of patience when reading or, you know, soon to be watching this. But I think it's also up to the animation studio and the production committee to really get an idea of how quickly or how slowly they work through the story. Because if they were to go at the pace of the manga itself, it may take a while before they're able to adapt a full season of work and actually be able to adapt enough material from the manga. Because, again, just to reiterate as well, for all the series that we'll be talking about today, I've only read up to one volume for each series. Because, one, I wanted to know enough about how things would go. But at the same time, I also don't want to spoil myself so that when I'm watching like the series as it gets adapted, I already know what's happening. I want to have a little bit of intrigue, a little bit of suspense when wanting to watch this stuff. So that's why I chose to just read one volume as opposed to more. So those are the sort of main three things that I have in terms of what they really need to nail down well to be able to make the series good. Because it's clear, I don't think this is going to get as many viewers as opposed to the other series we're talking about. But it's one of those, like, it's not a hidden gem. I would call it a dark horse. I'd say that this is a series that will do well, but may or may not have as many followers on my anime list compared to the other entries we talk about today.
I'm pretty confident it won't be a My Home Hero situation. That's what I would say.
That's actually something that I was thinking about as well, in terms of like My Home Hero being able to, you know, pace things, slow things down, create a grim atmosphere, but also like showcase, you know, a good level of quote unquote action when things get like, you know, when shit hits the fan. But as Jason mentioned, the delivery wasn't good. The intention was there, but if you're going to be, you know, a fan of My Home Hero, just read the manga.
So, two things I would want to mention about the voice acting. They actually announced, obviously because it's in the trailer, the voice actor and actress for Guido and Asaf. So, Toshiyuki Morikawa is voicing Asaf, and you'd be like, well, who is that guy? If you like JoJo, Diamond is Unbreakable, there is a character, and I'll just say the name, no spoilers, Kira. That is the voice actor.
That's a good voice actor.
If you like Jobless choice. Reincarnation, he is the dad, the Gray Rat dad. Paul, I think, is his name.
Paul, Mr. Gray Rat.
Mr. Gray Rat. So it is, and he has a lot of credits, voice acting credits, so it's very fine and established, and I'm pretty confident in his portrayal of Asaph, even with the very limited amount that we saw.
Is it Asaph or Asaph?
I think your pronunciation is correct, because I'm doing like the nuclear, you know, like the poor man toe, not poor man toe, like
you mean the Jason pronunciation.
Yeah, I got to fill that award category somehow. Okay, but
every time you say it, it just sounds like you're saying asshat.
He is kind of an asshat, though.
Is he?
A little bit.
Really?
He's like
a handler.
He is a handler.
He needs to be able to rein things in before like things go foobar.
I love the acronym FUBAR. Like, just as a side note, I don't think a lot of people know FUBAR's, like...
It's old. It's an old acronym.
It's an old military acronym. But Yu Taichi is the voice actress for Guido. Guido. Guido, thank you. I'm really bad with, like, these European...
I mean, who knows? The way they pronounce it, it might be Guido.
We'll find out. But she also has an extended, like, voice credits... in terms of little punk ass bitches. So you might think of Fruits Basket, the tiger.
Okay.
I mean she's also the voice actress for Dorothy and Princess Principal, which I really adore, and she has also a lot of these like male kind of punk, you know, very like spry voice credits. So in other words, her range is, I think, quite extensive, and I'm pretty confident in, like, abilities.
At least with these two voice actors and actresses, I think that, you know, based on their prior experiences, they should be able to carry the tone of what's needed in The Witch and the Beast. Now, whether or not that makes or breaks the series, that I don't think that's, like, you know, the singular reason. I think a lot of things have to come together to be able to make it good, right? It's not just down to them doing good voice acting work. It's also whether the sound design comes together, whether the animation is smooth, and whether they're able to deliver, you know, the overall sort of atmosphere that is built in The Witch and the Beast. So I'm probably going to enjoy it. It's going to be hard to tell whether this will have as many eyeballs on it as, you know, compared to the other series, but I think that if you've got time to watch something that's a little bit different in terms of the delivery of story, the delivery of action, this gets a good recommendation. This one gets a seal of approval for me as well.
I wholeheartedly agree. I will be very anticipating of the anime when it comes in winter 2024, and I have a sneaking suspicion that we will be saying that this is a good anime adaptation.
It is also probably the least predictable one, too, because I think the other ones, it's quite clear what kind of demographic they're going for, and they really play into it well, whereas this one is a much more sort of, like, smaller audience, I would say, that they're targeting. But
I mean, Seinen, by definition, yeah, is, like, more niche, right?
And not action-heavy as well, but, you know,
a lot of action, but it is not action-heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, each hit, it's like there's, like, only two punches, but each punch is, like, brutal. Like, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
So, like, basically, like, for lack of a better comparison, it is Ancient Magus' Bride gone wrong.
Yeah. With Criminal Minds. I do have to say, though, that a lot of the chapters are split into, like, cases. Very similar to, actually, Ancient Magus' Bride in the way they separate, like, arcs and stuff. So... the pacing to me is going to be interesting, because if it does occur, then how many quote-unquote cases do you put in? Obviously, it's not just focused on the duo. There are more other, let's say, characters that work together with the duo that is in like the later volumes that I think will definitely be covered in the first Cur, if not if they go a double, but I'm pretty sure it's one Cur. I'm pretty excited, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that all the series we talk about will be one Cur, with the exception of one. At least I think. I don't know. I don't know yet, but we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
Right. Let's move on to the third entry for today, which is, you know, still staying on the witch theme, but a lot... is it different? I don't know. The series we're going to be talking about is Witch Hat Atelier, which is written and drawn by Kamome Shirahama, published in English by Kodansha USA as of April 9th, 2019. It's also simulpubbed through K-Manga, so not too hard for you to be able to get it online, or if you want to get it in print, you can also order it too. Now, this adaptation was announced way back, like almost like over a year ago, back in April 2022. But as of yet, still no studio and still no premiere date. This is the series we mentioned earlier that does not have a whole lot of release information, but that's not the most important part yet. In terms of the manga itself, it is extremely, extremely good. In terms
How
of
good?
It's well, it's in the top 100. That's really rare to see when we talk about manga series.
That's
on this
insane.
ASD. It's an 8.59, which puts it 90th on the manga database for my anime list. 71,000 plus members. So
that to me is the more impressive number.
That
honestly,
just puts it just outside of the top 100. It's actually 201.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, you have to understand that, of course, rank in terms of the Mal Raw score matters, and Will and I put a lot of weight on that, or at least in terms of like getting like a rough idea. But the popularity is something, especially when it's really high, it's kind of crazy if you put it in conjunction with a high Mal Raw score, because it's kind of crazy. And for manga to be rated so high popularity wise.
Well, before we dive deeper into like the manga score stuff, why don't we actually just talk about the manga first?
It's great.
Yeah. That's it. Done. Okay. no, of course not. So the series follows a young daughter of a dressmaker named Coco. Now, she's always been fascinated by the world of magic. In this world, witches are good. Done. Plain and simple. But unfortunately, Coco does not have magical abilities. She always felt that she wanted to just read and learn the different spells, be able to conjure spells and whatnot. But none of that ever really, you know, hits. It just doesn't really work out for her. And it's just one of those things. It's almost like the quirk situation in My Hero Academia. You're either born with it or you don't have a quirk. That's it. In this world, you're either born with magical ability or you just can't be a witch.
Yeah, you just don't have that aptitude, that innate kind of mana well, I guess. I mean, that's very common in a lot of magic. So Coco is like, I kind of want to do this, but I have no ability and no avenue, then mysteriously has a run-in with essentially a mage. And
he's called a witch, too.
Yeah, there's, sorry.
Yeah.
A witch, yeah.
In this world, witches do not have, like, they're not gender-specific.
Yes. However, this witch is like, yo.
Do you know what his name is? Do you want to try and pronounce it? Because I can't pronounce it either.
I'll just say the letters first. Q-I-F-R-E-Y. Is that correct?
It's either Kifri or Chifri.
I think it's Kifri.
It's probably Kifri.
Kifri.
Or it's Quifri. Who knows?
Who knows with like these kinds of like magical pronunciations? It could be very elaborate like that.
Yeah. I mean, like it just may be in this world that the Q does not need a U to make a Qu sound.
It's Ifri.
But the Q is silent.
Yeah.
So what happens on this chance encounter between Coco and Kifri?
Essentially, without going too much into the spoiler part, Coco somehow has a connection to this essentially secret group of, let's just say, bad witches, known as the Brimmed Caps. Because in this world, it's kind of weird, in my opinion, because all the witches wear a certain cap that kind of looks like a pointy cone, which is like, I get it, like that's like your attire, but it kind of looks kind of weird. Don't you think so?
I thought it was cool. I liked it. I mean, it's definitely, like, in terms of costume design, it's not unique, but they really play into it and be like, yeah, no, everybody, if you're a witch, you wear a cone-shaped hat.
Yeah. But the Brim Cap people are like the witches that gone rogue, that does like forbidden shit. I mean, you've heard it time and time again in so many other properties, but they are kind of like this urban legend. But somehow Coco has this connection, this kind of clue that essentially the witch society, because witches in this world, for the most part, minus like the Brim Cap people, are all like good. They want to do good. They want to help people, save people. In fact, in the first volume, they do feats to literally like better the lives or prevent disasters for people. So that's it. And Coco becomes a witch, or tries to become a witch.
She essentially like uses the first volume of the manga series to sort of learn about what magic really is. And it's actually done quite you say uniquely, it's not that it's like, oh, wow, that's how they do magic. Oh, that's fucking awesome. Because, again, like, I don't want to say how they actually conjure magic because that's a spoiler. But it's not that different from other series that have done some sort of incantation of magic.
I do admit, though, the way that they, like, the lore, the world building of how magic works is always something that fascinates me in these sort of, like, witch, mage type kind. Like, oh, it's not just your typical D&D shit.
Well, it's also, like, it's not that hard.
Nothing's wrong with D&D, by the way.
It's not that hard to just use that baseline and sort of develop your world, right? It's just how much you deviate from it and add your own flavor. And I think that with the Witch Atelier, it does it quite nicely.
Right? I really like it.
It's not going to be, like, well, this is something that is fresh and unique. But what is fresh and unique is this is the way that the manga plays out is very shonen action. And what's really good is that we finally have a capable and strong female lead. We actually have a female protagonist that's not just a straight up damsel in distress and needs her friends to help her along the way. She actually is able to hold her own and kick some ass.
I think one of the things very early on, I think it's like chapter 2 or 3 in the first volume. I'm like several volumes in. It is interesting to be placed in certain situations, whether it is Coco or like the people that she is with as well, and they try to like figure things out. You know what I mean? It's like, for example, there was at one point, Kifri.
Just call him Kifri.
Sensei.
Up until we actually get confirmation of how to pronounce his name, we will be going by the pronunciation of Kifri.
He puts Coco in some sort of like test, right? Like,
well, he doesn't. He basically says there's a test.
Yeah.
Don't do it yet.
And then...
but then things happen.
Yeah.
And that's when Coco discovers the realities of using magic, how it's a lot... it goes a lot deeper than she initially thought. The reason why she was interested in this world of magic in the first place is because she comes across some specific magic and just is really, really intrigued in it, not knowing that there are actually deeper and darker implications.
It's like naivete, basically.
Yeah, right? And then things go real bad, foobar, if you will, and she just has to rectify it. She stands by the side of justice. She needs to be able to figure out how to right all the wrongs. And, you know, there's Kifri who comes along and says, you know, things aren't all that black and white. It's not that simple of these people are bad, these people are good, and that's how it is. No, there's always an in-between. It just depends on which side you decide to step on a little bit more. I think we can leave it at that in terms of the plot synopsis and the as non-spoiler as possible sort of description. Now,
well, one thing I will say, though, is Coco is like a kid.
Oh, yeah. No, she's young. I think she's like maybe like 13, 14, maybe even younger than that.
Yeah, like this is not like a teenager, like more like what you would consider like someone who is very mature.
It's like when you first meet Naruto, basically. It's essentially someone who is in like their early teens. And well, Naruto is just a punk, whereas she's not a punk, but she's extremely naive and open-eyed to the world of magic that she just does not see that there are darker implications as to the usage of magic. So I think that this is refreshing in terms of having a magical girl / magical world action anime. There's been a couple of those before, but it's just nice to see that we're turning the tides on the representation of main characters and seeing that this time around, yes, it's the fact that it's focusing on witches. So, of course, you know, people might get the connotation that it's more focused on female-centric characters. But I think that that's still a good thing. I think that it would be a disservice to have, like, a witch character that wasn't a female. It is weird, though, that like her main guide, her main counselor in this is a male witch, but... you know, we're not going to get into, you know, gender stereotyping here whatsoever. I'm pretty excited to see how this one goes. I think that this one will be a banger. It does come down to, though, which studio is going to be making it.
Right, because as of right now, and Will mentioned it in the very beginning of this section, other than the anime announcement, which is kind of like the typical like Solo Leveling's first trailer where it's like manga in motion, we don't have a studio, we don't have a release date. And here's the other thing about the manga's art. It is super... like, the description that I would use to describe the art of Witch Hat Atelier is exquisite. It is so intricate. I would say it's even... it's like... it is like almost like reading a fairy tale book of sorts, right? And it would be very, very interesting to see who is going to pick up the mantle to adapt it. Now, of course, you might be saying, Jason, Witch Hat Atelier, isn't that kind of like Studio Wits jam? If we put, you know, Wit,
I wouldn't put Atelier. That was terrible.
That was terrible.
I wouldn't put Studio Wit. And I think like it's probably not something they would do unless it was a collab. So I actually have two sort of guesses slash predictions, if you will. If this was just like a standalone, like 12 to 24 episode series, I would have said no-brainer Studio Trigger.
But oh, shit.
Yeah. But the fact that this is, it's still an ongoing manga, and I think it's going to do well, which means that there's going to be more series that come, like more seasons that come beyond what's to come for this series. I think in an ideal world, it would be a co-production between Cloverworks and A1 Pictures.
Oh, shit. I was going to go a different route. I was also thinking a co-production, but, and I might be crazy in saying this, and it's, I don't think it's even possible, but in like my metaphorical world, it would be a crossover between Kyoto Animation and PA Works.
That's not ever going to happen.
I know.
But what I say about Cloverworks and A1 Pictures is entirely possible.
Very possible.
Yours is just...
like a wow. Pipe dream and a pipe dream.
I mean, I thought Magic was ridiculous, but what you just said was just, well. No, but you think about it this way, though, right?
Like, maybe Bones and Wit, Clover, I think, would also be Bones a decent choice.
It doesn't seem like a Bones kind of thing. Wit, maybe.
Okay.
If it was a Wit and A1, because Wit and Cloverworks have worked together, right?
Okay. I'm going to, like, do a third. Okay, this is kind of stupid because I keep saying, like, all these, like, collabs, right? Assuming that it is even a collab. But I think Wit Studio and Kafka would probably be pretty good due to their relationship on the handover of the Ancient Magus's Bride. I think that it's at least a decent of the three options that I gave you, right?
Possible. I'm still holding
on. No, yours is good. Yours is legit. I think
because of the fact that with Mashal, they've done A1. A1 did Mashal. Cloverworks have done a lot of sort of like fantastical stuff as well, and it makes things look really pretty. Not to say
they're
that
A1 both very yeah. pretty. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think the reason why I say it's a co-production though is because of the fact that Cloverworks is still like hot and heavy with Spy Family or Spy X Family, and they've got a lot of other stuff that comes up. Like every year, A1 Pictures and Cloverworks are always producing a fuck ton of stuff. So I would imagine that if they were to work on something, they might be able to divide up like some staff and put them together in a room and just work together. That I think that's
you two probably, kiss work yeah, together. You yeah, know?
I think that's the way that like I would imagine it to go. Because if it was just a sole Cloverworks or A1 Pictures, like dude, this is going to be a long series, and I don't think either studio is going to be able to just pump out like long running TV series without the help of a co-production. This is not a MAPPA situation. Because I don't think they're big. I don't think they're nearly as big as MAPPA.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and but A1 is pretty big.
Well, A1, yeah, because they work under the Aniplex like sort of subsidiary umbrella. But even then, I think the fact that like they do so many productions, they do like originals as well. So how likely is it that they're going to be taking up another long running series under their repertoire as well?
Do you remember who is the parent company of Kodansha?
I need to check.
Yeah. Okay.
It might be Shukakukan because they own a bunch of shit.
Yeah, that's why I'm like thinking like if maybe it's from there. But I do find it a bit scary in a way that up till now, despite it almost being like more than was it April 2022,
yeah, so
right?
Well over a year.
So why has there not really been anything? No news? Is it in production hell? Is it because they... Because if you generally announce that you're making an anime, you have something, right? You have an arrangement of sorts, right? So that you're confident enough to hype people up, right?
Well, I think at the same time, it was announced like at the beginning of 2022, which, you know, Japan was still in the midst of, you know, a government like advisory warning for COVID, which means that whilst they might have gone to committee to greenlight stuff, production might not have even started. I very much doubt that they even got like people to come together to actually start producing stuff. Rather, I think that this may, I mean, dude, like Solo Leveling was announced like a while ago too, and it still hasn't come out yet, right?
Yeah. So, same thing with Kaiju number 8. Yeah.
So these things take time. I would imagine by the end of the year, like when we start getting into like the 2024 seasons, that's when we'll get announcements. I think if all goes to plan, will probably release in fall of next year.
That makes sense, because usually the fall is always where the crazy heavy hitters, the award-winning anime series debuts.
And I think summer comes too soon, not to mention that like summer usually gets like drolled by like a bunch of like kind of mid productions like year to year.
And this year's no different too, by the way.
I think fall 2024 is a safe bet. I think like a year from now, we should be able to start watching Witch Atelier, and I'll be excited for it because it is probably of the five, the one that I think would hit the hardest. I think that this one, because it works well. It's got the fantasy element, the magical girl element. It's got the action in there. There's the adventure aspect of it as well. There's an ensemble cast, I think, work really well together. So this is probably like, it's not going to be like the next like shonen action hitter. I don't think like we're comparing this to like Chainsaw Man and Jujutsu Kaisen and all that. But I think that like this is something that will definitely be on your watch lists when it arrives. Whether or not like I'm correct in terms of it being, you know, CloverWorks and A1 Pictures, or maybe it's a Witten Kafka thing that Jason mentioned. Who knows? We will probably get some information by the end of the year, though. I think it has to. I think like if it goes 2 years after announcement and there's still nothing, then there might be some problems. Maybe they're just trying to hash out how the story will be told and whatnot. Maybe they're trying to figure out like who would actually be the right studio to produce it.
Yeah, or maybe, and again, there's no evidence for any of what I'm about to say other than speculation, but maybe it's because of like COVID delays. There's a lot of projects that are still in the pipeline, so then they need to like kind of finish it so then they can then go fully committed all the way, whatever this studio is, for the anime adaptation of Witch Hat Atelier.
What I will say is that if they're taking this long to put stuff together, then my hope is that they're doing the right things and not rushing this, making sure that they have the right committee in place, to have the right studio in place, to get the perfect voice actors and actually hash out the script so that when it does hit production, things run smooth and we're able to watch a very, very good adaptation of what is already a really good manga series.
I gave it a 9 out of 10. I really like the manga series.
A lot of people agree. I mean, the fact that it's basically an 8.6. It's 8.59. That's basically an 8.6 for me, right? Yeah. Like, that is as good an indication that even if it doesn't hit that same score, minimum it should be an 8, right?
But 100%.
But that's also just speculation. It's also just us not knowing a whole lot of, like, the behind the scenes or who's going to be working on this series. This is just hope. Right. And also carrying the hype. And we hope that people also, like, you know, in the meantime, whilst they're waiting for the anime to come out, read the manga. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it is.
I think at this point, we're going to take a quick break. We will be covering two more manga series, but these ones, I think, will require a lot more discussion. So I hope you've enjoyed what we've talked about so far. But after the break, we'll be going into the final choices for our ASAP 3 and in terms of manga series that, when they get anime adaptations, we think will be good. How are you feeling about the last two? Do you feel that you've got a lot in the tank to talk about them?
I think I do, actually, or at least there is a lot of interesting talking points for sure. Regardless, those two mangas that we are teasing right now, after the break, we're going to obviously talk about them. I mean, this time around, all the ASAP candidates, in my opinion, other than maybe 100 Girlfriends, are like 9 out of 10s. They're all 9 out of 10s. It's like, I really love the mangas that we're covering this ASAP.
9 out of 10s in terms of the manga, right?
Correct.
Because it's hard to speculate what the anime score will be. But we're confident. We're confident it'll be good.
It would be arrogant of me to assume that I know everything about the future, right?
But one can hope and dream, right?
Yes.
These are going to be good adaptations, and when they hit the screen, that everyone else agrees that they'll be good. But, that's to be seen. So catch us after the break. We'll be going into the last two submissions for today's discussion, and then hopefully get you to not only, be excited for a new anime to come out, but, read some manga in the meantime.
All right.
We are back for the second half of today's episode, episode 65. As mentioned, this is ASAP 3. We've gone over three manga series and now tackling the final two. These two are going to require a little more discussion because, one, they're very long, but two, they also are quite slow-paced, and therefore we do need to spend a little bit of time dissecting and digesting the manga series and how they will be adapted into the anime formats. So, Jason's back here with me. We're going to be going over, at least I think from your perspective, two of your favorite manga series. At least one of them you really, really, really like.
Yeah, and obviously I think we somehow have structured these two to come like the last two, but because I think I just think there will be a lot of discussion about especially this next manga that we're talking about, which it is Fieren Beyond Journey's End.
Right.
Surprise, surprise.
So the manga was written by... was written by Kenehito Yamada, who did the story, Tsukasa Abe, who did the art, published in English by Viz Media, and it's also simulpubbed through Viz Manga. So you can definitely, get it quite easily. Now, the manga, in terms of its score, is the highest that we have. Not that much higher than Witch Hat Atelier, but still 8.61, putting it at a rank of 82. Popularity, now we're talking 153, with 86,470 members. Now, this will be premiering in fall 2023. We do have a confirmed start date, which is September 29th. In similar fashion to Oshinoko, this is not just going to be a singular episode premiere. No, they're going to be releasing a two-hour premiere for Fieren. Now, this is going to be simulcasted on Crunchyroll, and I think the production studio is the one that caught everyone by surprise, Madhouse.
First of all, you have to understand, even if you don't really read a lot of manga or don't really care, Fieren Beyond Journey's End, for some context, is a manga that has won a shit ton of awards. Like, a lot. And it is one of those where, even before Will and I even knew of the manga, we have heard, it won, the manga ga sugoi. It won the Shogakukan.
It's constantly on the top of this manga really needs an adaptation list through Japanese media, through Western media. It's the one that everybody really, really wants to watch in anime format. Now, of course, before you had stuff like Chainsaw Man and Kaiju No. 8 and whatnot, but this one is very, very different because it is a very slow burn manga series that I think, whether you like it or not, is going to tell a very, very beautiful story. Now, the story revolves around four main characters, though really one main character. Fieren, who is a long-living mage. She's of the elf race, and in terms of, fantasy lore, elves live for a very, very long time. She also is supported with her party, which is Himmel, the hero, Heiter, the priest, and Eisen, the warrior. These are all very, very German names.
Yes.
Yes.
So in this kind of fictitious world, in this storyline of Fjern and Beyond Journey's End, as the title implies, we actually don't follow three of the four main characters. We follow Fjern. Because what happens is this party, as you might hear time and time and again with all these like fairy tale like hero or isekai. This is not an isekai, but it's like, oh, let's go vanquish the demon king that is like wreaking havoc on the human world. Well, what happens when you have finished that? I don't think that's a spoiler because that's literally like the whole premise of the manga, of the show, of the adaptation is what do you do when you live forever almost in comparison to everyone else?
Right.
And your main quest of vanquishing the evil demon king is over.
Yep. Time passes by differently for an elf. In this world, or at least, you know, in a lot of worlds are based on fantasy lore. 1 second for a elf could really mean like a minute, an hour, a day, for like a regular human being. So whilst one person lives on an average lifespan of 80 to 100 years, she might already be 1,000 years old by the time she's met someone as a baby and they are now on their deathbed. And this is the sort of reality that Fjern has to come to terms with because of the fact that for her, living for a long, long time is just a normal thing, right? I mean, like, she's an elf. Her creed, her people are all elves. Like, of course, like, everybody lives at the same pace as everyone else. But when it comes to dealing with other beings, whether they're human, dwarf, gnome, or whatever humanoid denomination they are, time does not go as slowly for them. Now, what I wanted to sort of, you know, go into as well is that not only do they really go deep into the lore of fantasy and magic, but they also sort of give a lot of connotations of characters and locations based on the names they use as well. So, for example, like Eisen, the dwarf, he is a warrior. And Eisen in German means iron. Makes sense. He's the iron dwarf.
Makes sense.
Right? Heiter, the healer. Heiter means bright. Again, light magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Himmel, and then the main hero, yeah.
Himmel, the hero. What do you think it means?
Hero.
No. Heaven.
I see.
Yep. And that's Tengoku, right? And that's what starts the story, essentially, because wait, hold on. Let me see if it's actually in the synopsis. It is. Okay. So Himmel the hero, unfortunately, is the oldest and also being human, meaning that he does not have as long a lifespan as the other characters that we talk about.
Well, two.
Well, it would. Spoiler. So what happens then is, as time goes by, after they've gone through their journey, their trials of might and magic, unfortunately, Himmel's time has come, and he is now laying on his deathbed, and Fjern comes to visit him. But Fjern's kind of unmoved. I think for her, she just seems to think that, well, that's just the way things are, right? I mean, I've lived for centuries. There's nothing that's special about other people living shorter lives than me. I know that I am an elf and I live longer. But then Heiter, the other human, comes up and says, well, there's a reason why you're here. And there's a reason why you're moved by the passing of your bandmate, your friend, your brethren. It's because maybe there's something that you did not know enough about them. Maybe after all the time, for you, knowing Himmel was just, you know, a short amount of time. But for him, he knew her across his whole lifespan.
Right.
And so therefore, it then dives into the real crux of the story. What does she actually do with her time? Who is she actually conversing with, learning from? And what does she actually gain from the experiences of the people that she interacts with, on the missions that she undertakes? And just generally, as time goes by, as slow for her, what does she make of the significance of time itself?
Yeah, because one of the things that I think is very evident when someone has a lifespan that is way longer than like everyone around her is dealing with tragedy, emotions, loss, all of these things, elation, the whole spectrum. And Fjern is essentially in many ways, like Violet Evergarden-esque, right? Of not having a lot of emotions, but probably has a lot of trying to understand like why people act a certain way, why they value certain things that is very different than her own set of values, or maybe she doesn't even have an opinion, not because she doesn't care, but because it's like just not in, she's just very indifferent about it, right?
Which is why like the definition for her name is actually twofold. Fjärden means frozen, which not only means frozen in terms of emotion, but also frozen in time.
Yeah.
She legitimately just moves at a pace where everything around her grows and decays at a fast rate. And for her, she might not need to spend all that much attention and time to, you know, see other things around her go by the wayside, because for her, life just continues to move on. And therefore, she does not necessarily develop a very long connection or understanding of the people around her. Now, we've talked a lot about the characters themselves. We talked a lot about like small plot points. And at this point, you might be wondering, well, what the hell is Fjärden Beyond End's Journey all about? And that's the thing. It is a very, very slow-paced manga series that details the step-to-step days of Fjärden living her life and meeting new people. It is legitimately the slowest slice of life manga you could possibly come across. And it's not necessarily, like, calling it a slice of life is not the right sort of definition of what the series is, but it plays out that way. Because legitimately for her, it's going to, you know, a corner store to buy certain ingredients, going to the guild halls to be able to take on new missions, maybe visiting old places that she used to work on when she, you know, was on her journey to, you know, fight evil and all that.
I think it's I'm pretty sure something of that ilk like happens time and time and again in the manga series, but it's kind of like, oh, you haven't gone back to your hometown or whatever. Like, imagine a scenario where, you know, you go back home to your hometown and like the restaurant or like the playground that you went are like, is like replaced by like, you know, a parking garage or like a mall, right? And then you being unfazed are kind of like, huh, I mean, who cares? Cause like next time I come back or go through here again, it's going to be something else again, you know?
Yeah. Or it might just be the case for her. It's like legitimately she goes someplace and like so much time has gone by that the person she met may already be dead, may already have moved on.
Yeah, I just find it funny that in certain places in the manga, like her journey, she has to like stay put for a certain period of time. And she's like okay with that. And everyone else around her that she's like either hanging out with or like traveling together for whatever reason are like, no, don't do that. That's like 2 to 3 years. And she's like, wait, what's wrong with that? Because her sense of time is so different than everyone around her. And she just, it just is not like, it's not that she doesn't care. It's more like she just doesn't understand the sort of like the urgency of certain things. And it is just immensely interesting because despite us not telling you a lot about the plot beats,
that's literally it.
Yeah,
it's her living her life and you're there to enjoy the ride. Now
it's a journey, if you will, right?
As much as there is a lot of hype, and definitely well deserved, I mean the stats show it's definitely one of the most popular manga series, the amount of awards it's won shows that it's been dying to get an adaptation. But I worry about how it's going to be adapted. And before we even get into the Madhouse thing, in terms of reading the manga, now I've only read one volume.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely slow. In terms of the pace itself, it took forever to get from one place to another. And it never really felt like there was a whole lot going on. Now, I get that that's the point in reading Fjärden, and I'm totally down for it. What I worry about it, though, is that it does not necessarily translate well to how it would be portrayed on screen. Like we said, in terms of having enough ambience and silence, the fact that there's not a whole lot of stuff going on, I think, means that there's going to be times there's going to be just some dead air.
You know what it reminds me of? It's like those like walking simulators, like those video games like Gone Home, where the story is there, or there's lessons learned, or and one of the things that I really love about the manga, I gave it a 10 out of 10, I'm like more than several volumes like in. I'm not up to date though, but I'm pretty close. The thing is that there is a lot of like morals of the story, but they're not in your face about it. They pay a lot of attention to detail such that the way that they portray time is not like, oh, 3 years later, 4 years later. They use a very specific point in time, and it, as we said, it is in the plot synopsis, is a certain death of Himmel, right? And then the whole manga is told from that point onwards, because that's literally when Fieren embarks on this journey of, in many ways, self-discovery and exploration, and the people that she meets along the way that that hangs out with her along the way. And it's a very neutral anime and manga, in my opinion.
I think that the perfect comparison for what this manga series would be when it gets adapted is Mushishi.
Oh, fuck. That's a good point.
Mushishi was a very, very slow-paced, story-based anime series that legitimately every episode was slow as fuck, but it ranks as one of the top 100 anime series of all time.
We love it.
And there must be enough people to enjoy it. I mean, the fact that it's people have been calling for it to get adapted, there has to be something for it. I'm only just saying that these are my worries for how it gets adapted, simply because pacing for this series, I think, is going to be the most important. Forget about sound design. Forget about character design. Forget about voice acting. If it does not pace itself well, it can be very easy to lose the attention of its viewers. And that's where I was like interested when I saw that it was a 2-hour adaptation.
Dude, I'm so worried about that too.
And before even reading anything, I was like, well, this is a very, very long thing. After reading the first volume, I get it. I know exactly why.
I also know why, but I'm also scared slightly because this is not like an Oshinoko 90-minute premiere situation, because in my opinion, and Will obviously, I think he also agrees, is that where the first 90-minute premiere episode for Oshinoko season one stops at the end of episode one is like the most appropriate way to kind of kickstart the whole series, right?
And the fact that like it was like every 20 to 30 minutes there was a major plot point, twist, move on to the next thing, major plot point, twist, and then end. Oh, y'all like that shit? But don't worry, we got many more episodes of Oshinoko coming out.
Shit's about to start, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
This, on the other hand, imagine watching Mushishi as a movie. You're watching each story nonstop. That's what pacing we're talking about here. And this is not to like scare everybody off from watching the series. I think Fieren is going to be really good. I just worry that for a lot of people, they might misconstrue it as just slow and boring.
Yes. And I also believe that the thing of the 2-hour premiere is in some ways like extremely ambitious and I wouldn't say arrogant or cocky, but you know what I mean? They're very confident. There it is.
You're literally showing all your cards.
Yeah. We're saying that.
Like, the guy is like, I've been dishing out cards. The river hasn't come out yet. Boom. All in. What? Like, okay, all in? Okay, so you're just doing like a double... Are you doing a double cur? Are you just releasing a long, like, 1-hour episode? No. We're going to double that. We're doing 2 fucking hours. This is a feature-length movie.
Yeah, that's essentially almost half a cur, 5 to 6 episodes worth of content in one go, and that's me being kind of, like, conservative about it, right?
Now, I don't know how much spoiler this really is, so you can choose to answer or not, but do you feel that this 2-hour movie is going to encompass all of Volume 1? And that's the reason why they did it in the movie, because if they were to split Volume 1 up, it would actually be a disaster for them. I think they had to be pretty strategic about it, and that's why they chose to do it as a 2-hour movie, a 2-hour episode, to debut the series.
Because, and I'm not going to say what it is, but because I'm trying to be somewhat cryptic, the end of Volume 1, to my knowledge, is a very pivotal moment where it causes a lot of things to kind of set in motion, right? Essentially. I'm trying to be as cryptic as possible.
Not really. I can discuss this off air with you, but
yeah.
But the thing is, I'm hesitant to say that the anime is going to be a banger. And this is not me being a naysayer or a hater. This is just me being cautious with my optimism for Frieren. Because as much as I love this manga, it reads really well. But it almost feels like it's better suited in a novel format, like a light novel or a manga, compared to being an anime adaptation. Now, we do have an anime adaptation, so we can't tote back on that anymore. It's been announced. I think the fact that and the fact that they have Madhouse doing it of all studios, this is crazy.
Yeah, and the other thing on top of all that is you also have to understand that, and this might not apply to every single person, but I do think it is a factor to consider, is that when you say to someone that there is this awesome hype show that the manga is so successful or so hotly anticipated, and then the first episode to be 120 minutes, we keep saying it might be a hard sell. It is somewhat of a hard sell. I know people that want to watch Oshinoko, ready to sit down and watch it. Then the first episode like starts, and they're like, why is this 90 minutes? The fuck? And I'm like, but it's really good. And they're like, nah, bro. Of course, that's not like everyone or the majority of people. It's the inverse. But still, it's like a factor where, especially where I think Will is trying to allude it would end, is a very delicate situation in terms of pacing. Like, no shit, Sherlock. No shit, Jason. But when it is even more slow and leisurely in a way, and non-judgmental, not highly stimulating, you know, no ups and downs. It's just kind of like, you know.
Like, do you remember when we used, like, during the midst of, like, heavy COVID, like, real COVID, like, when we were doing our, like, our Discord, like, watch parties, and we were watching Mushishi, it was really hard to go beyond two episodes back-to-back.
Also, we didn't really talk.
Yeah.
There was no banter.
Yeah.
We still enjoyed a lot of it. In fact, I would say we enjoyed almost all of it. But it was just like, what would you do? What would you say?
But I think it's also the fact that, like, because of the fact that it's so entrenched in its storytelling, that's why we didn't really say a whole lot. It's not that we needed to have discord over, like, what was happening on screen. No, I think the screen itself was telling us, this is the story. Sit tight and let me tell you about the tales of Mushishi and his spiritual journey. Much like how this one is going to be letting us sit down and tell us about the tale of Frieren on her frozen time escapades.
And here's the other thing. A lot of, I think, the moral of the story, or like what you might get out of it, is completely up to you as the reader. I think in more so than, you know, when it's like a typical like Naruto or Bleach, like, you know, friendship prevails or you get the love of your life. Here, it's kind of like more how you interpret it, even if it's very cut and dry. It's like what you get out of the situation, which I think is also kind of meta, because that's kind of like how Frieren probably feels, yeah, too. And I think you might be like, oh, who gives a shit? But some other people might be like, oh, bro, that really cut deep. And I think both situations are valid as fuck.
Yeah. I think that, you know, and this is also including the last series, which I think, you know, we'll definitely really get into. But of the five manga series that are getting adaptations that we're talking about today, I think that the storytelling is the richest and the most well thought out in Frieren compared to the other four series.
And I don't know if you caught this, but it's surprisingly kind of funny.
Yeah, no, there's a definitely, like, it's not meant to be a comedy. It's not like a comic series. No, I think that a comedy series. I think it plays itself where whenever Frieren or any of the characters come across certain situations, there's nothing better than to just sort of break the ice, right? It's ways to sort of break you out from the doldrums of heavy storytelling and snap you back into something that's a little more contemporary, a little bit more reality based.
Yeah, and the dialogue is not like this grandiose, like, language heavy, melodramatic.
It's not as heavy as Witch and the Beast. Because Witch and the Beast plot can get pretty heavy. It can be really much like inundated with like how dark and edgy it
and
is.
And brooding and cryptic, right? But here, it's this kind of like, look, that's fucked up. Yes.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. That's not right. Like, that's vile. That's disgusting. But then...
Let me go fix that. Okay, cool. End of chapter one. Chapter two. Oh, no. There's another really disgusting thing.
Oh, we're still walking?
Hey, no. That's not disgusting. But it is disgusting. End of chapter two. Chapter three.
Yeah, and I know it sounds like we are making fun of it, and we are, but...
We're just trying to simplify it,
you know? In many ways, it is such a simple story. There is... But it... I really love this manga. I am also genuinely, like,
It's very minimalist.
So minimalist. The art in the manga is very presentable, very good, but it's not like...
It's not
Witch
like...
Witch Atelier.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like Witch and the Beast, where it's, like, all this, like, grandiose... It's not this...
You rarely get like one of those double panel. Oh, the hero standing over a cliff, overviewing the land and all that. Like, you don't get those. But what you do get is like the most beautiful thing are the words, and it's like that's probably like the most case in point kind of thing I can say. Where the story itself drives Fieren. I think that if you really vibe with the story, then no matter how slow it gets, that it just resonates with you. And I think that's what you need to bank on. Yes, both Jason and I are very cautious to give this our like two thumbs up seal of approval. But I know how much Jason loves it. I like it a lot. But we both are fully aware that there are going to be potential shortcomings when it comes to translating it onto screen.
Yeah, it is not as easy as a lot of people would assume when adapting anything, for that matter, right?
What did you make of Madhouse being the studio chosen for the series?
So about that, right? Of course, that's kind of like the elephant in the room that we have not really acknowledged yet. But of course, it's like the big deal, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The thing is that another show that I liked a lot that really is not like on everyone's like, oh, this is like an awesome show, is Sonny Boy. I think that Sonny Boy, and you might say, what does that got to do with fucking Fieren Beyond Journey's End? To me, it is more of how serious and the tone and the risk that they might take. Now, this might be pure speculation, which it is. Madhouse is kind of like picking up again, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel that The Madhouse after, I think, essentially Redline, because we kind of went into that on episode 11 of all things, they went incognito on hiatus for like, I mean, they probably have done like stuff here and there.
Well, actually, they were actually producing stuff year to year, but they were like working on more low-key kind of things.
Yeah, and I think it was either due to restructuring or like trying to, you know, as they say, get back in the game, right?
But I think like the main series that they were like still well known for and still producing is Overlord,
right?
But in the last few years, they worked on things like you said, like Sonny Boy, Police in the Pod, Bibliophile Princess, right?
Yeah, but when we say that, right? Like,
oh, Gene of AI was also Madhouse, which by the way, the score for it's actually picked up a bit.
Yeah, okay, they did Yamada-kun, right? Level 999, right? Like. It's not, or they did.
Wait, did they do level? Did they do Yamada-kun? I think they were on the production committee.
They were like,
so they were still like pretty
involved,
active,
yeah.
Still pretty active behind the scenes. But when it came to actual like hands-on productions, outside of Overlord and maybe Sonny Boy, not a whole lot. And so when then you see them working on one of the most hyped and one of the most sought-after adaptations in Fieren Beyond End's Journey.
Beyond Journey's End.
Beyond Journey's End. This is where I'm like, okay, I have faith in Madhouse because I like Madhouse a lot. I know that there have been some series, particularly in my opinion, Gene of AI, that might not resonate well with people, but I am going to hold judgment until the series drops, which, as of recording, will be coming out in a month's time.
I have to admit, though, we talk a lot about cast lists and staff lists being stacked for certain shows. But Fear and Beyond Journey's End is the most craziest, like, staff list ever. First of all, it is Keiichiro Saito, who did Bocchi the Rock. He's the director. Then, for series composition, you have Tomohiro Suzuki, One Punch Man fame, okay? Character design, the girl from Tacked Up Destiny, Reko Nakasawa. Then, for music, who else other than the other foreigner that is not Kevin Penkin is Evan Call, famous for things like Violet Evergarden. Like, holy fuck. Like, that's insane, dude. Like, how did this happen? Like, I'm glad it did. But, like, it's also, like, I'm worried that despite so many assurances, whether it is the source material, the staff list, their confidence of the two-hour premiere, just everyone seeming, like, jumping on this support for Madhouse as a production, as a studio. And I firmly believe that if Fear and Beyond Journey's End ends up, like, being, like, one of the greatest of all times, I have no idea if it is or not.
It has the makings for one.
It definitely has the ingredients, and it will definitely put Studio Madhouse literally back on, like, the map, you know? But it is kind of, I'm, like, hesitant.
So we'll see. I mean, September 29, was it? Yeah, so it's only a few weeks' time before we actually dive deeper into it. We talk about the fall 2023 premieres. So, you know,
do you think we could? I mean, we don't have to, but maybe, like, you and I just sit down and watch it together
if we've got time.
Yeah, of course. If we can't, we'll make do. Right, but I'm just saying, like, it might be
I'll prepare, like, you know, some coffee, because this is going to be a long one. I mean, dude, like, it was already quite long.
We need to buy popcorn. Yeah, basically. Holy shit.
Coffee and popcorn does not sound like a very good mixture.
But what is a good mixture sometimes is poison.
Okay, I'll get you that one.
Dude.
Up is our final entry for today's ASAP 3, The Apothecary Diaries. Now, this one is very, very hyped by Jason. I think that as soon as the manga, the anime trailer came out for it, Jason's just like, "Have you watched it yet?"
I'm like, "What? Will, did you know about this? Will." I was such a piece of shit. So Will.
Yeah. So the Apothecary Diaries originally is a Japanese light novel series written by Natsu Hyuga and illustrated by Toko Shino. And then there was a manga adaptation for it. The English adaptation is published by Square Enix Manga as of December 8th, 2020. It's also published digitally by Square Enix through their Manga Up platform. Now, we've talked about the Up platform. This is something you can read, too. Now, the manga scores are also really, really good. 8.46 for its raw score, 164 for its ranking, popularity at 364 with a total member score of 43,458. So it's in the midst of the series you talked about, but again, anything above, like, 10K, I think there's enough people on MAL that are, like, fully aware of how good the series is. Now, the adaptation is going to be coming out in October, so fall 2023. No confirmed specific date for it, but we know that we're only about 2 months away from actually being able to watch it.
It will probably be, like, the first or second week, just like a lot of the other premieres. They usually, like, bunch up together.
Yeah. What we do know, though, is that it's going to be simulcast on Crunchyroll, and this is the first time today that we're going to be talking about a co-production. This is between Toho Animation Studio and OLM. Now, both studios have been doing some pretty decent work over the course of 2023, OLM specifically. The Toho is no slouch themselves. So I'm pretty sure that the production side is going to be pretty decent. And I say that because after hastily turning on YouTube and watching the trailer for Apothecary Diaries, it looks good. It looks pretty damn good. But we're not here to talk about the trailer just yet. We're going to be talking about what the hell Apothecary Diaries is all about.
So in order to really describe Apothecary Diaries, you need to kind of know a little bit about Chinese history, because believe it or not, this is set essentially kind of like Imperial Palace, like Chinese drama kind of situation. And this is essentially in an imperial court in ancient China. There is always this kind of role dedicated as a servant is a taste tester. Because during that time, people can get poisoned because they want to either be, they want, like, people want them assassinated, or, you know, there's all these kinds of, like, political intrigue, backstabbing situations. So you usually get someone who specifically is there as essentially a fall guy, right? Yeah. To taste test the food, make sure it's not poisonous, so then the person in question is able to then consume the food confidently, safely. And in this situation, our main heroine is a taste tester for, I guess, one of the concubines. And she is super into poison.
Yep. Her backstory, her name is Mao Mao. Yep. They're giving quite a lot of Chinese names to a lot of characters, though there are one or two that have Japanese names. Now, the reason, actually, this makes kind of historical sense, being set in the 17th century. This would be in the middle of the Qing Dynasty. This is the time when you had, you know, Japanese invasions coming in. You had a lot of uprisings and rebellions within the country of China as well. So therefore, like Jason said, there would be a lot of attempted assassination, sometimes successful as well. There'd be a lot of people that would be stirring up trouble within the palaces of China. So yeah, I think that what I'm not saying that like a lot of things are historically accurate. I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying that this is kind of based on like the real findings of what happened during the like 1600s to the 1800s of the Qing Dynasty in China.
And one thing that I also want to reiterate that may not necessarily be very apparent for people that are not familiar with these types of imperial palace dramas is the first thing is it is a genre, whether live act, usually live action.
Very popular in live action.
Very popular in Asia, period. Like Korea, Japan, China, of course. Like everyone. It's like it's subgenre, basically, right?
Like, whenever like I go up to the China and I always just watch like local TV, half of the channels usually are playing some Imperial China-based drama.
Right. And on top of all that, one of the things that you might be like, oh, so it's just like a theme, but it wouldn't it be overdone? One of the things that is kind of like integral to these kind of Imperial Palace dramas is the intrigue, even like, for example, like because there are multiple wives, because of concubines.
There's multiple palaces. There's multiple kingdoms.
There is like power struggles even within like the, I guess. The
Even at the very top, it's like it's not easy being at the top. Right?
Yeah, and then there is respect. There is all these like can be very intricately layered. And Mao Mao is like, I guess I'm just going to be like this herbalist CSI poison taste tester detective that I am kind of essentially not partnered up in any of like romantic sense, or though who knows, with essentially this guy called Jinshi, who is my gong-gong-le-ga.
He's a eunuch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
it hasn't been explicitly said, but I mean, a lot of characters say this is a eunuch.
Right, which is usually someone who involves heavily with the concubines, but because of that, he is castrated?
Yes, eunuchs are castrated in order to essentially not propagate within the imperial palace, because all the concubines, all the wives, and all the other people are essentially, for lack of a better word, property of the king.
Yes.
So that's why, like, you know, in order to not thin out the bloodline, only the king himself can produce royal children.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, he decides that he wants to pass off those responsibilities to another prince or maybe another king somewhere else. But that's where we come into the power struggle thing here, too.
Yes. And Jinshi is essentially kind of like the handler, for lack of a better term, because he's castrated. So then, in essence, historically speaking, he is, quote unquote, like not a threat towards the emperor essentially interacting with all these concubines. And because of that, typically speaking, a lot of the people in these roles usually are either they look more effeminate or they act in terms of their personality is more effeminate. And this guy's a pretty boy too in the Apothecary Diaries.
Yeah, to the point where a lot of characters, both male and female, kind of just swoon over him. And that's going to be like a running theme and a reoccurring theme throughout Apothecary Diaries. So you might be wondering as well, it's like, okay, so you got like the whole palace drama stuff. You got like this young girl who is, you know, going to be like a poison taste tester for
you got all this historical stuff, Imperial Palace.
What else is there about this, right? This just sounds like the usual like palace drama kind of archetype.
Yeah, like what's the shtick? What's the deal? Do you like CSI, Will?
Yeah, I actually really did. I liked the first series a lot until like they decided to get rid of the original Grissom.
And, John Grissom, right?
Yeah. Grissom was dope.
I have a soft spot for Miami. I kind of like New York, but mainly because of the main male character.
Yeah.
But essentially, this is the Imperial Palace CSI involving poison because Mama was like, that's just my shtick. Like, as in like... Oh,
well, she was training to become like an apothecary when she was younger. She was learning to actually deal with potions and poisons and all that to, you know, either create remedies or in some cases know how to create poisons for specific uses.
And if you know how to create it, you are also well versed in detecting it, being able to analyze it or just have more knowledge. And the thing I like about Mao Mao in particular, among many other things I love about Apothecary Diaries, is just how nerdy she is. It's just like, it just so happens that the thing that she is into is poison. But she is so nerdy.
Yeah.
Like, so nerdy.
And that's not her only thing, too. Like,
of course.
They ask her to create other kinds of, like, remedies for ailments, certain stat boosters.
And her upbringing is also very relevant in terms of the storyline, and it I'm just going to keep going on and on about how much I like Apothecary Diaries. But that's just basically the premise of the show. Now, earlier we mentioned about OLM and Toho Animation Studio. And, of course, there was a trailer that we watched. And I think there was at least, like, two of them.
Yeah.
But let's talk about OLM real quick. Because Summertime Render, for example, or... Komi Can't Communicate, that's OLM, right?
Yeah.
Are all extremely well-produced pieces of anime. Then you have Toho Animation Studio, which is essentially like, do you like JJK? Of course, it's like MAPPA as well, but Toho Animation Studio is like involved, at least like with season one, quite a bit. Then obviously you have Kaiju Number 8, which is done by Toho Animation Studio, and now
which will be done.
I mean,
depending on when you listen to this, it might be out.
Yeah, it's April, but in 2024. So
who knows?
But listen, it's so pretty. I can't believe how pretty it is. The trailer, like, it's sharp. It's like my Happy Marriage level of color vividness and fluidity of animation. Would you kind of agree with that statement?
No, I think it visually looks good. I think it just comes down to like the studios knowing how to pick up the right aesthetic for this. It's very pretty and vibrant. And again, like that's kind of what people go for when they do palace type dramas. Like they really want to like get enough color. Which is why, like, you know, in terms of like the dresses, in terms of like the makeup, the hairstyles, the way that the palace itself is constructed, it's not that like different from what you would see from a palace drama, but it still looks really, really damn good.
Because it's kind of, don't forget, it's the place where the royal family resides and lives, and it's gotta be opulent, right? It's gotta be grand. Right, in terms of you know, Chinese historical context, I mean, it's like the Forbidden City. Essentially, it is the Forbidden City, right?
Yep.
So, yeah.
And as you mentioned as well, right, like Komi Can't Communicate, Summertime Render, they even did Odd Taxi as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They all looked really good and presentable, but they're also different because the fact that they're a lot more contemporary. right? That all sit in like real time, real life shit. Whereas this is more fantasy. I'm not saying fantasy. I'm saying this is more like historical, right? But it's like when you talk about, like, for example, like the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, or even like the stuff we talked about previously, right? Raven of the Inner Palace. We talked about,
right?
My Happy Marriage.
Right. When you like say that. Fantastical, you mean it almost in like the Asian version of mythical. Like Lord of the Rings,
it's
right?
Mythical, yeah.
Right? It's so grand, right? Even though there is not anything supernatural about it, it's
fantastical rather than being a fantasy.
Like you would look at it and be in awe, so to speak, like metaphorically speaking.
I mean, dude, like when in the trailer when they have that pan of her running along the steps of the three of the kingdom as
dude,
well.
Dude, that was insane. Essentially, it's like, oh, yo, it's kind of like that typical scene of like, oh, like welcome to the palace or welcome to the casino, right? And then you see like the character walking, and then the camera or like the perspective goes past the character, and then you kind of see like
the title card.
Or it's like when the RPG starts, like in Final Fantasy VII, like it just zooms out and then
it rises above the clouds, the heavens, and then the Apothecary Diaries coming out.
Except now it shows like the palace, and it's kind of crazy in the way that it is. Is it like extremely like super well like produced and animated? Not necessarily, but it's done in such a way that it looks really good.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that this one will be a minimum high seven. And I say that because, again, it's like it just comes down to what the majority feels is the right thing for them to watch. Again, it's coming out in fall, and fall historically has like some real heavy hitters. So it could be the reason why like it doesn't score as highly, but I am confident that there'll be enough eyes glued to the screen to appreciate Apothecary Diaries.
I think this will definitely be a low eight. It is not going to be like the show that you might be like losing your mind over, but it would basically be like, okay, we just watched that show that is super hype. Let's now watch Apothecary Diaries next, as in like it's second in line in terms of like the tier of, or the quality, at least how I anticipate Apothecary Diaries will be. I think of the five shows that we are talking about, and obviously the five IPs, the Apothecary Diaries, in terms of the look and the aesthetics, is the one that I'm the most confident in terms of like my opinion of what I think it will be like.
Well, because I think like the trailer itself did a really good job, right?
Yeah, like it did sell me on that look like instantly.
I think that, you know, in the last year, right, we've had Raven of the Inner Palace was like a mid 7, like 7.5, 7.6. Then you also in this current season with My Happy Marriage being an 8.3, both of them kind of based in like kind of like a kingdom dynasty palace style drama set piece. I think that Apothecary Diaries could safely fall somewhere in between those.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Like
if Happy Marriage can be an 8.3, I think this would be really good. That's what I'm saying. Like the bare minimum it would be like a 7.8, 7.9.
Now, adaptation looks aside, what do you think of like the character development, the interactions with what you have read?
Oh, it's simple. It's not that grand. I think like in terms of like how characters speak to each other, the type of character archetypes that they have are not that different from what you would see from like a romance comedy or like a rom-com or a romance drama, right? So the way that they converse, the way that they develop plot points, the way that they develop over the course of the series, I don't think that it is like super unique and intuitive, but it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, I agree. Like those quote-unquote like CSI cases or crimes or mysteries, it's not very intricately laced. It is not.
And the comic gags they have are also like very typical too.
Yeah, it's like very whatever, right?
But those are not things that we're going to be using to judge the series itself, right? I think that, again, everything has to come together like a puzzle, and therefore like if you have like all the pieces fit in snugly, like it's going to work.
Yeah, I really do think that a lot of people, including us, is going to use that like puzzle piece analogy, because I think as a whole, Apothecary Diaries as an adaptation and as a manga is extremely good. Or at least the animation, I assume, would be really good.
Like, of the five we talk about today, you think that this one is going to be the safest choice for people, right?
In my opinion, yes. Now, but if you'll be like, but what about like the music, Jason? I'll be like, yeah, it's all right. It's like, all right. Oh, what about the animation? It's like, yeah, it's all right. It's like not the best, not the worst. But if you break it like individually, I wouldn't be like very hype about it. You know what I mean?
It's not something that like, oh, everybody has to go and watch the Apothecary Diaries. It's more just like, look, take the time to appreciate it. This is something that, much like Fjerdin, you really have to sit down and just watch what happens on screen and not try and force yourself to find the hype moments or wait for like, because there's no action in this. This is not, there's no action at all, right?
Yeah.
But that's not, if you're trying to look for that, then you're looking at the wrong series.
I think shows like Oshinoko, Bocchi the Raw, Fjerdin Beyond Journey's End is going to be a show that is going to be decisive in terms of people's opinion of it. But in my opinion, you either love or hate those shows. I can like very much readily like anticipate that people's opinions of those three shows I just mentioned is going to be like very clear cut.
Yeah. If you need like action, well, there's Undead Unluck. There's Deadman Death Play Part 2. There's another season of Seven Deadly Sins. There's going to be more Dr. Stone if you want to see like some cool hype action shit. This is not what it is. And I think that like that goes the same with Fjerdin. It goes the same with Witch and the Beast. To some extent, Witch Atelier, but I think that there's going to be a little bit more action in that one, which rightly should be. But I think overall, in terms of like, we weren't trying to go for a theme in terms of the series that we picked. It just so happens that outside of 100 Girlfriends, all of these manga series are very rich in how they tell the story, how they portray characters, and how the two come together to create a very encapsulating atmosphere that hopefully can translate well when it goes from manga to anime.
I think recommending Apothecary Diaries to anybody would be like a way more easy sell than any other show, in my opinion.
I thought Witch Atelier, actually. I thought that would be the easiest one. But I think that...
We don't know the footage and that stuff. So it's like harder for me personally. But as
based on the manga itself, you know that there's going to be a lot of action. There's going to be a lot of chase scenes and hype moments in Witch Atelier, whereas there's none in Apothecary Diaries. But if you look at it more from like a sort of... like this is clearly like a romance drama with some comedic undertones to it, then yeah, this is probably going to be it's a good slice of life.
Yeah, I really understand what you're trying to say with Witch Atelier, because I think Apothecary Diaries is like a safe choice, but it's not going to wow you to death. You'll be like, oh, that was a good show. But Witch Atelier, Fjerdin, and maybe in some cases The Witch and the Beast would be a show that you will live or die on that rock, on that hill, to advocate or like deny it. But which Apothecary Diaries, you'd be like, oh yeah, that was all right, it was cool, it's above average, it's like an 8, it's like an 8 or a 9, whatever, it's an 8, probably an 8.5.
it could be a 7 for some.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, 7s are still good, right?
Still good.
I think it's just the fact that like the way that the story is told, it really does depend on if you like palace dramas.
That's the last thing I do want to mention, because I don't know if other people would understand the nuances that maybe you and I will get instantly. I'm not saying other people won't appreciate it.
I disagree.
Like Raven? No, Raven did good in the end.
I disagree in the sense that like people might not resonate well with palace dramas because it's hugely popular in Asia. But if we were to talk about the Western side...
Yeah, for sure.
That's where I'll be like, who knows? Because I think it's like, when people like watch, at least this is my interpretation, because I've spent a lot of time, because I am Western, right? I am Canadian, born Chinese, right? So when it comes to like looking at...
We're white boys.
Yeah, we're white people.
Well, no. Holy shit. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But when it comes to like...
We're Western.
Yeah. When it comes to the sort of interpretation of appreciation for anime, I feel like a lot of it is either focused on like contemporary real time shit, like stuff that's happening right now, or even futuristic. And then there's also stuff that's like, if it's going to be in the past, there has to be a lot of fantasy elements in there too, like some magic or some battles and whatnot. Stuff that is a little bit more history based is a little bit more unique. It's the same when like when you watch more sort of like history based stuff on Europe or, you know, South America or Asia or Africa and stuff, right? It's you kind of need to have some beforehand knowledge to fully appreciate, because if you're just watching it and you're trying to educate yourself along the way, it can be really hard. Like, Fieren is purely fantasy-based, right? Witch Atelier, even Witch and the Beast, it's all fantasy-based. This one, as far as it comes, is the most sort of like real, quote-unquote real historical adaptation of what happened during the Qing Dynasty.
Wait, you're telling me that 100 Girlfriends is not historical? Okay, I'm just joking.
There, I mean, there is a god that, you know, grants wishes for those who want to confess their love to people, but Okay, fine. Okay. In terms of Japanese history, 100 Girlfriends is canon. Okay, fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, no, but it is, I think, especially compared to other certain more like grounded in history, like I think like the Nobunaga Concerto is one that I really didn't vibe with, because I felt like I need to have a history lesson before and during the time that I watched it.
But those who did get their history lesson like really fucking love it,
and the score, right? Does reflect that for a lot of those people, just it didn't vibe with me. But I think Apothecary Diaries, despite, you know, being set in imperial like China with palace drama and all that intrigue and themes, I do think it is simple enough, yeah, or straightforward with the CSI element. I really do think that CSI element is very accurate in terms of like a one sentence summary.
You don't need to have like a Wikipedia article of the Qing Dynasty set up on the side as you're watching Apothecary Diaries. There's no need for you to do like a lot of beforehand research to fully understand and appreciate it. Like Jason said, the story and the language used is simplistic enough for you to be able to vibe with it. Again, it just comes down to whether this particular type of drama series works for you.
Yeah. I don't think you need to know that Jinshi is a, what's it called? Eunuch?
Eunuch, yeah.
Eunuch, and that essentially means that he has no balls.
But he works as a servant for the palace.
Yeah, because in the manga, even though they do mention it, they don't really go in depth into it. And if you don't know that historical context, it's kind of like,
yeah,
they're added flavor.
For me, when I was a kid watching all these shows, it's like, I knew what a eunuch was. But there are people to this day who's like, they chopped their balls off? What the fuck? And yeah, that could be like a shock moment that could be like detractive of what their appreciation for the series would be.
Or you can just see it as it is. It's like, he's just a pretty boy.
Yeah. Nonetheless, I would wholeheartedly recommend people to at least check out Apothecary Diaries. I don't want to, like, you know, I think this pretty much ends the overall analyses of the series we talked about, and I don't necessarily want to go into like a ranking of like of these five series, which ones were most hyped for, which ones were not hyped for, because I think all of them deserve a place to be, like, you know, in someone's catalog of, you know, plan to watch on my anime list or whatever list you use. So I think we'll just leave it at this in terms of, there's no really a bad anime adaptation that will be coming out from these five series. I think it just comes down to, what do you like, Love Polygon / Harem series? What do you like, more dark, mystical, brooding series? You like more fantastical magic girl and witches? You like stuff that is more slow-based storytelling, like Mushishi? Or in this case, if you wanted to see a palace drama mixed in with some like CSI like elements too. They're all unique in their sense, but nonetheless, they're not like earth-shattering, groundbreaking. There's nothing of its kind, right? Like, this is essentially us trying to let you know, if you like series of that kind of ilk, then I don't think you have any issues picking up any one of these series.
You should get on it ASAP.
Yes, ASAP for ASAP.
There we go. That is the end of our episode. You can always reach us through our email, gapalette@gmail.com. That's GAPALETTE, all lowercase, all one word. You can use the handle @paletteGood on Twitter / X. capital P and capital G, all one word.
Let's call it Twitter for now. Until, until we are legally obligated to call it X.
Please, let's just call it Twitter. Thank you. We do have a website. We encourage you to check it out, www.goodanimepalette.com, all lowercase, all one word. You also, we have a Discord. The invite link is in the show description. I just realized I got the script for the wrong thing again. Music credits for this episode.
ELFL?
ELFL.
The song is?
Shit. Fuck.
One day we'll get the script right.
It's did you know it's Never Right Now that by ELFL, who did our opening. Our break music is Not Gonna Wake Up, the instrumental version by Mind Me, and our ending is Like the Ocean by The Big Letdown. All music is provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're interested in using Epidemic Sound, an invite link, a referral link, is in the show description. Please be aware, though, all terms and conditions do apply.
And don't forget, if you want to support the music artists, you can also listen to their music on iTunes, Spotify, whatever platform you choose to use.
Thank you. I was like trying to like remember.
Piece together.
Yeah.
Well, at least we pieced together the five manga series we've been talking about today. I am confident that like there's going to be enough people who enjoy these series. Outside of 100 Girlfriends, I don't think any of them are going to rate below a 7.
Yeah. I think all of these shows, especially like the last four that we talked about,
yeah,
are probably going to be in a lot of people's rotation.
I think that with Apothecary Diaries, Witch at Atelier, as well as
Fieren,
those are going to probably have eights simply because the fan base for them are diehard as fuck.
Yeah, and it's just so hype.
But also because they could be good adaptations too. So yeah. Like, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, predict anything.
I think The Witch and the Beast is going to be like a mid to high sevens for sure.
I would hope for it to be higher because I really do like that one. But at the same time, I understand that there may be some things that hold it back from achieving that 8 out of 10 for most people. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see when they find the air, and then we can watch it and review it.
And we will definitely let you know when we do. Other than that, I think that is it for this episode. Will, any last words before 65... stays, like, you know, ends? I don't know.
No, not really. Other than the fact that, yeah, maybe I'll take up that offer to watch the 2-hour premiere for Fieren. Oh, God. That's going to be really, really long. 2 hours long, specifically, yeah.
Yeah. Fuck.